At the end of Shoftim chapter 18, we have a loose end that we have to clean up before we can start chapter 19. Also, I have to note, some of you are aware of this from other shiurim of mine. I'm going to need something at the end of the shiur, just for like a minute. It'll take a minute. It's painless. And hopefully you get a laugh out of it as well. Rafal's already laughing. All right. So, this last business that we were dealing with, Yonatan ben Gershom ben Moshe / Menashe, in which we were told, the series for the year is dedicated by Michael and Ruthie Mammon, thank you, and this particular session is dedicated as well with the following gifts from our Day of Giving in July, from Nathan Kirsch, Susan Jerkowitz, and Louis Klein. Okay. So we had identified the mysterious Levi as Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe, but the way that Menashe is written in a properly written Tanakh is with the Nun above the line. So the Gemara in Bava Basra, it was Kuf Tes Amud Beis to Kuf Yud Amud Aleph, 109b to 110a, asserted that this is actually Moshe's grandson. And that the way he ended up in this boat was that his grandfather had said to him that it will be better for you to perform Avodah Zarah, which we translate as idolatry, rather than for you to need the assistance of others. And as the Gemara said, what Moshe meant was you should go out and get a job, even one that is beneath you, beneath your dignity, work that is foreign to you, Avodah Zarah, rather than need to get help. But he took it as, hey, go out and, you know, worship Avodah Zarah. So the text concealed it, as Rashi said, in order to preserve Moshe's honor. It put in that little nun, but it put it in above the line, indicating that there's something wrong here, and giving you the hint, which is really the giveaway, and which the Gemara then expands upon, and tells us this whole story. If you really wanted to save Moshe's honor, maybe what you could have done was said, Yehonatan ben Gershom ben, like Ephraim or something. If you really didn't want to clue people in, or just say Yehonatan ben Gershom, and then nobody would have been the wiser. In any case, the question that I wanted to wrap up with is, how does this happen to Moshe's grandson? What in the world is this, and what are we supposed to learn from this? Because if Tanakh does choose to hint at it, and the Gemara seeks to explain it, what exactly are we supposed to learn from here? So I noted at the end last week that depending on how you read the chronology at the start of Parshas Yisro, it's possible that Moshe's sons were actually not at the giving of the Torah. It depends, because in the beginning of Parshas Yisro, Yisro shows up with Tzipporah and Gershom and Eliezer, and the question is, was that before or after the giving of the Torah? So that's interesting. But it doesn't really explain how his grandson ends up in this boat. So one answer is the answer we already gave from the Gemara. It was the result of economic privation and misunderstanding. That's one approach. But take a look at your sheet, please, where I brought you two other sources that I think are relevant here. One indirectly, and the other one directly. So the first one is a Gemara Nedarim, Daf Pei Aleph Amud Aleph. I find this Gemara endlessly fascinating. I think this is actually the second shiur this week that I've used it in. I used it also in the Midrash Yom Rishon on Sunday morning. It's a very handy Gemara to know. The Gemara asks, why is it that it's not common for Torah scholars to have children who are also Torah scholars? Now, of course, we can point to dynasties. You know, you have Rabbi Lau Sr. and Rabbi Lau Jr. in Israel. You have the Soloveitchik clan. Yeah, that entire family that runs near Yisrael in Baltimore. You certainly have cases in which it does happen. On the other hand, there are many cases we could cite where it doesn't happen, and not necessarily that, you know, the father is a Talmid Chacham and the son is walking away from it entirely. And by the way, I only gave male examples because I've been thinking about male examples of this, but, you know, you can go beyond that. But fundamentally, just that, you know, the father is a Talmud Chacham and the son has no interest whatsoever. So we get a few answers. Amar Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef gives us the first answer. Shalo Yomru Torah Yerusha Hi Lahem. So that people won't say that Torah is an inheritance. Meaning, if you see that the rabbi is the Talmud Chacham and his son is the Talmud Chacham, you say to yourself, sure, the kid is the Talmud Chacham. You know, when I first went into the rabbinate, I remember that people would ask me this question all the time. They'd want to know, is your father a rabbi also? And of course the answer is no. There had not been a rabbi Torchiner before me in centuries, as far as anybody can tell. But it was sort of an assumption, of course your father must have been a rabbi too. And it creates a sense that somehow it's an inheritance. So Rabbi Yosef says it's that people won't say Torah is an inheritance. That's our first answer in the Gemara. I'm going to come back to it. Rav Sheshes Breider of Idi Omer Kedei Shelo Yisgadru Al Hatzibur. Rav Sheshes Breider of Idi says no. The concern is that they're going to lord it over the community, right? Torah is mine. Teaching Torah is mine. It's the province of my family. We are the repository of knowledge. We are greater than everybody else. Marzutra Omer Mipnei Shehin Misgabrin Al Hatzibur. Marzutra says it's actually because they do lord it over the community, not in case they will, but they actually do, and because they do, they're being punished by not being able to communicate it to their kids. That's a way to read it. Rav Ashi Omer Mishum Dekaru Le'Inshi Chamri. Rav Ashi says it's because they call people donkeys. Shades of what Marzutra said. As I read these lines, the line of Marzutra and the line of Rav Ashi, I wonder, there are two ways that I could see to read those explanations. One way to read it is that it's a punishment, right? God says, if you are going to lord it over the community, if you're going to call people donkeys, then I'm going to show you, your kid is going to be like everybody else. See how you like it. The other way to look at it, though, is that it's a consequence. If the kid sees that the father is a Talmud Chacham, and this is the way he relates to people, this is what Torah means, then he says, thanks but no thanks. I have no interest. This isn't a business I plan to go into. You follow? And then the final answer here, Ravina Omer She'ein Mevarchen B'Torah Tchila. Ravina says it's because they don't say the bracha before studying Torah. We have Birchas HaTorah. It is supposed to be said in the morning, and it covers all the learning of Torah that we do all day long. And because they don't recite the bracha on learning Torah, therefore their kids don't become Talmidei Chachamim. What does that mean to you? Sorry? Why would they have to do it during the day? They're taken care of in the morning. Rafal, you keep on going on and off mute.
Reasons.
I think I heard you say Zrizos. Okay. David, what were you going to say? Right. So my gut would have been where David goes with this. We have a separate passage in the Medrash that says that the reason why the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed was because we didn't make the bracha before learning Torah. And everyone reads that and says, why does that warrant the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash? I mean, you know, it's a mitzvah, but like, why should that, you know, that means they're learning Torah. And, you know, and yet you're going to tell me you destroyed the Beis Hamikdash. So a classic explanation is that it's not a matter of literally did they say the bracha. As Rafal said, if he's a Talmud Chacham, odds are he says the bracha. The question is how you treat Torah. Do you treat Torah as a spiritual pursuit? Do you learn Torah as the word of Hashem? If a person learns Torah in the same way that you can learn other things, it's an intellectually stimulating study. So I can study math, and I can study physics, and I can go learn Torah. But that's all it is to me. It has no spiritual import. It's not really learning the word of God. So even if I say the bracha, but it's not something that is religiously meaningful to me, then maybe I won't be able to pass it on to my children. Right? Because when children see that their parents engage in something as a hobby, that doesn't mean the kid wants to take it up. Right? Maybe my father plays golf. Okay, I'm not so into golf. I'm going to play football. Or my father collects stamps. I'm not so into stamps. I'm going to collect bottle caps. Yeah, your parent has a hobby, an interest. That doesn't mean it translates to you. As opposed to, if it's spiritually meaningful, maybe there's a greater chance that the child will be interested. There are no guarantees. Let's not kid ourselves. But maybe it will be potentially more appealing if the child saw that the parent took it spiritually. You follow? So looking at this Gemara and all the different explanations that we're giving here for why one's child might not follow the footsteps to become a Talmid Chacham like the parent, can any of these apply to Moshe? Yeah, maybe it's meant to show people Torah is not an inheritance. Now, I don't really understand this, because I don't know if this is trying to say the Talmid Chacham can have a son who is interested in becoming a Talmid Chacham, but God is going to make it hard for him or dissuade him in order that people not think that Torah is an inheritance. In other words, the son is going to suffer in order that people should not get that message. I find that to be very challenging. I find that to be difficult. Maybe it means that Hashem won't help him in Torah. That's a potential one, but that's the only one of these that I could actually apply to Moshe. The other, Moshe doesn't call people donkeys. Moshe doesn't try to lord it over the community. Moshe views Torah as a spiritual thing, that's for sure. So, like, none of the others can really work. Yes, Chuck?
Yeah, I was just going to say that this does not apply to Moshe. Modest of everyone. He didn't lord it. He didn't lord his knowledge or he was over anyone. He was a leader of the people.
Right.
So I can't see this applying, but I do think it's worthwhile to note that community leaders often sacrifice time with their children. And that has consequences. So you often have leaders whose children don't follow in their footsteps only because they weren't spending the time with their children.
Right. But that the Gemara chooses not to bring that, interestingly, although there are other passages of Gemara that incline towards that. But this one does not. The best source on this, that source, I think, is interesting. But the best source on it is the next one. Source number 2. I heard this medrash for the first time from Rav Mendel Blachman in Keren B'Yavne in a tish on a Friday night. And he had an interesting take on it. I think there are a lot of different things you can do with it. Take a look at source number 2. This is a Mechilta on Parshas Yisro. And Mechilta is very strong medrash. When you look at medrash that's considered to be like most authoritative, Mechilta is always very up there. Moshe names Eliezer and Gershom. He says, Eliezer is Elokei Avi Be'ezri, right? The God of my father helped me. He saved me from the sword of Paro. But Gershom, Moshe says, Ger Hayisi Be'eretz Nochria. I was a stranger in a foreign land. And that's what the Medrash here is commenting on. Nochriya, a foreign land. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Eretz Nochria Haisalo Vadai. He says it certainly was a foreign land to Moshe. Rabbi Lazar Amodai Omer, Be'eretz Nochria, meaning Nechar, and then Yud-Heh. What does that mean? Nechar means a stranger. Yud-Heh is God, meaning a land of a foreign God. Eretz Nochria does not mean a strange land, a foreign land, but the land of a foreign God. What does that mean? When Moshe said to Yisro, I want to marry your daughter Tzipora, Amar lo Yisro, Yisro said, sure, but kabel alecha davar zeh sha'omar lecha v'ani nosna lecha le'isha. He said, you have to accept what I am about to tell you. I have a condition for you, and then you can marry her. So Amar lo mahu, he said, well, what's the condition? Amar lo, ben sheyiyeh lecha tchila, yiyeh l'avodah zara. Mikan ve'elech l'shem shamayim. Your first son has to be raised for idolatry. After that? Okay. They can be for God. That's what he says to Moshe. Your first kid's got to go for avodah zara, then you can marry my daughter Tzipora. So, v'kibal olav, and Moshe accepted it. Amar lo, hishavali. He said, swear to me that you're going to do this. Vayishav alo, and he swore. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, Vayo el Moshe. When Moshe decides to stay, the same language that we used with the Levi when he decided to stay, Vayo el Moshe, Lasheves es ha'ish. So Vayo el is an expression of Allah, which is an oath. The Ein Allah el Lashon Shavua. It's an expression of an oath. He swore that he would do this. Lefichach hiktim ha-malach la-rog es Moshe, which, by the way, is why the malach wants to kill Moshe, for agreeing to that. What sense can you make of this medrash? What in the world is this medrash talking about? Where does this idea come from? How can we fathom Yisro demanding this of Moshe? Yisro, who left Avodah Zarah, right? Yisro is the one who was Kohen Midian, priest of Midian, and he left it. How in the world can he make a demand like that of Moshe, and why would a Moshe go along with it? Chuck.
It's a metaphor. I think it's referring to the resistance to circumcise his son in the Midbar, and the angel coming to kill him, and Zipporah coming and circumcising the son, where Moshe was saved.
Okay. I'm hearing what you're saying, but it doesn't sound like a metaphor.
Moshe would never accept a avodah zarah.
I would think.
He would never agree to dedicate his son to avodah zarah.
Mm-hmm.
But he pushed off the obligations of his son within the Dalet Amos of Shulchan Aruch. But he pushed it off, because you're not supposed to circumcise your son when he's in danger. That's why the Jews were never circumcised in the Midbar.
But Yisro, when Moshe isn't even yet, when Moshe hasn't even married Tzipporah, Yisro doesn't know that the time for Moshe to circumcise his son is going to be on the way back to Egypt, such that there would be a danger. We're missing a whole bunch of steps. I mean, in terms of where the Medrash gets this idea from, I think the Medrash is playing on a couple of things. Number one, when Moshe says, Ger hayisi be'eretz nochriya, I was a stranger in a foreign land, recognize that Moshe has already been living there for decades. This isn't in the beginning of Moshe's journey. We know that because Gershom is a tiny baby, or Eliezer, it's unclear which child we mean, but whichever child it is a tiny baby at the time when Moshe goes back to Egypt. Moshe's 80 years old at that point. Moshe left Egypt when he was 13 or 20, the Medrash says. The Torah just says, Vayigdal ha'ish, that he had grown. but he was 13 or 20. Either way, Moshe's been in Midian for decades. Why does he call it, I was a stranger in an Eretz Nochriyah, in a foreign land? So I think that's one piece of evidence the Medrash is building on, and it's saying it's not a foreign land. It's a land of a foreign god. That's number one. Number two, because Moshe's Nochriyah is redundant. Once you say, Ger Hayisi, I was a stranger, obviously it was a foreign land. You don't need to say the word Nochriyah. So I think that's a second piece. And then the third piece is this Vayoel language, which the Levi used for Avodah Zarah, and Moshe uses here in a parallel line. So I think that's where the Medrash is getting it from. But I remember that at some point I had another explanation for this Medrash besides the one I'm going to give, but I don't remember what my other explanation was. Maybe if I get a chance and I find it, I'll send it along. But Rav Lachman's approach to this Medrash was to suggest that we identify Yisro as somebody who is seeking truth. He was the Kohen Midian, and he dropped that role as the priest of Midian, subjecting himself to harassment from the people of Midian. His daughters are harassed at the well. Why did he do it? Because he felt it's not true. I need to follow what is true. I'm not just going to follow that which is comfortable or that which makes my life easy. And so Yisro wants Moshe to raise his son to be a seeker as well, and not to take religion for granted. And so he says to Moshe, you can marry my daughter, but you have to be willing to give your kid the education such that he can become an idolater just as easily. That was his explanation, which may be a nice idea in theory, but it results in the grandson going off to Avodah Zarah. Right? It results in Yonah's son ending up being an idolater. So it doesn't quite play out the way that he may have wanted it to, or the way he likely wanted it to. You follow?
It's still very hard to accept the fact that Moshe would accept such a thing.
Yes. Yeah, no, I'm still not happy with it. I thought I had another approach to this Medrash, but I'm looking at my notes and I don't have another one there. So it could be I did it in a different shear, but I didn't do it in this one. But I thought I had another explanation somewhere for this.
Same way you explained how he misinterpreted Moshe's Avodah Zarah.
Yeah.
So he's just passing down the same. He understood from Yitro the same thing he told his grandson, which was in the end misinterpreted.
So actually, it's interesting. Rav Tzadok HaKohen says that. In the Pre-Tzadik and Parshas Yisro, Rav Tzadok HaKohen offers that may be what was going on, that Yisro really just wanted him to work in Yeshuvo Shalolam. He wanted him to do the work that is foreign to him. That's his suggestion. But it doesn't really sound like that in the language of the Medrash, right? When he says the first one is Avodah Zarah, and from there on L'shem Shamayim, and the whole play on Nochriyah, it doesn't really sound like that to me, but I can't prove it's wrong. Yeah, no, Byron's point was that we had said last week that, and I recapped it in the beginning this week, but it might have been before you got on, that the Gemara in Bava Basra said that the reason why Yonatan ben Gershom ended up doing this was because Moshe had told him better to engage in Avodah Zarah than to need the support of others. But what Moshe meant was work that is foreign to you, not Avodah Zarah idolatry. Yeah. I'm just looking now. I called up on my computer. It's the advantage of giving a shear with my computer here. I'm calling up a couple of shiurim where I've used this Medrash just to see whether I have anything else. But no. I have a shear on fathers-in-law and culture clashes with your father-in-law. Yeah, I guess that's relevant.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, could it be that Yisro wants Moshe's son to choose the right path on his own, rather than as Yosef is saying that it comes as an inheritance?
Right. So that was what Rav Lachman was really suggesting. He wants him to be a seeker. I think that's that idea. I'm not sure I buy it, but I think that's the idea, is what you're saying. He wants him to come to it himself. I have a hard time buying this idea. I think that number one, the contrast he gives, the other one will be L'shem Shemayim, this one will be for Avodah Zarah. It doesn't sound like it to me. I don't have a better answer. And I have to look at my notes and see, because I thought I had a different approach to this Midrash. All right. So these are suggestions that are made for how Moshe's grandson could end up serving Avodah Zarah, either like the Gemara, that it was the result of a misunderstanding, or that it shows Torah is not an inheritance, so Hashem is not going to help him towards Torah, or this mechilta, that it's a product of Moshe introducing his firstborn to Avodah Zarah, to idolatry. All right. All of that wraps up the story of Pesel Micha. What we learned here is... Yes. Yes, Chuck.
I just been going through the thing. There's something on Parshas Yisro from Winding Torah by Rav Frank, who ties in the thing to the stuff with the angel.
Yeah.
And circumcision decision. I don't know if it's worthwhile exploring or not, but...
You can take a look at it later and see if you have any way in which it'll be useful for us. I would certainly be glad to, I'll certainly be glad to hear it. Okay. So, what we get out of this story, first and foremost, there's no Melech b'Yisrael, there is no king, and that's a bad thing. It ends up being destructive. That's number one. Number two, there's a growth in this period of either idolatry or syncretism. Number three, we have become like the Canaanites. We've become greedy, we've become idolatrous, raiders of the Tzidonim, instead of God-worshipping people who are serving God by establishing a proper society. And finally, there is no outside enemy in this story. We are the enemy. It's the people of Dan who go raid Micha. It's not from some outside entity. So, unfortunately, that now brings us to chapter 19.